from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about all the ways the State Museum is celebrating the holidays.
I'll take a look at the Eitelsorg's new Contemporary Art Fellowship exhibit.
And I'll check out the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indiana State Museum certainly knows how to keep Christmas. Their Celebration Crossing has something for everyone. Teas and trains, woolly mammoths and a vintage arcade, Star Wars and skateboards, and of course, well, Santa. Travis DiNicola sat down in front of a fire with David McDaniel, project manager for Celebration Crossing, to learn more.
David, welcome to Art of the Matter. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Travis. It's always a pleasure.
And happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you.
So much going on at the State Museum for the holidays. Celebration Crossing, of course, is sort of the key point of it, but so many other things that are happening that I'm really looking forward to talking about. I guess Celebration Crossing is sort of the overall title of everything, right?
Right. It started in 1991 when we acquired the Ellis Airs Santa Claus Express train from the downtown Airs store, and we've built interpretive exhibits and programming around it ever since.
Cool.
It's great now that, in fact, it's kind of come full circle in that our presenting sponsor, Carson's, this year is, of course, located in the original Airs store at the
corner
of Meridian and Washington Street. So we're real pleased to have them on. They're sponsoring also our Santa holiday breakfasts and brunch, which we are in the middle of the month doing. And a great time for everyone who comes in and gets to see, visit with Santa and ride the train and have a delicious brunch or breakfast, which is catered by Conn's, our in-house catering.
Very cool. I hear Santa has a new house this year.
He does. Well, it was new last year.
New last year, okay.
We've added some things to it. Mm-hmm. It's on the first floor, so those of you who have been coming for many years will really enjoy the fact that it's not quite so crowded being the house and the Santa Claus train in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
But that train is on this third floor still, and we have made some changes this year. I think people are going to be interested to ride through the Mastodon Cavern and Snowflake Ridge. It's a great new look.
Now, everything that we're talking about pretty much is part of the general admission to the State Museum?
Correct. Exception to that is something new this year called Celebration Arcade, and we have on our second floor, right across from Santa's Playground, a room full of Q-Bert, Pac-Man, old arcade games. Of course, they're not old to me.
I have to admit, I was really excited when I heard about this. I mean, what a great list. I mean, you've got old games, like the Pole Position from 82, the list here is awesome, an Asteroids Atari from 79.
Right.
Let's see, Paperboy, that was a fun one, from 84.
Right.
The Star Wars Trilogy Arcade from 99. But a lot of old Atari and Midway and Konami and Namco games. How did this end up that you guys decided to do this arcade this year?
We were approached by someone who has a collection of arcade games and pinball machines, and we just worked out an agreement that we are housing them, and for our patrons, it's just a great, great fun thing to do. It's great for multi-generational because I can bring my grandchildren in, and as other people are doing, and say, well, this is what Paul used to do way back when.
Right.
And it's great. A good game is a good game, so it doesn't really
Absolutely.
Matter how old it is or how long it's been on the market. It's great fun.
And I'm seeing here, so it's if you do the general admission, the arcade is $7. You can go to the arcade alone without museum admission for $10.
Correct.
Members
are $7.
Excellent.
$7, yes.
And then is that basically like gives you free play as far as what's available?
Or? Unlimited free play. You walk in
deal.
And just delve into it. Just jump in. You mentioned the Star Wars game. And, of course, Star Wars is going to be premiering at IMAX Theater on the 17th. The 29th, we're having a Star Wars overnight at the museum.
Oh, cool.
So it's a viewing of the film. There'll be Star Wars characters there. You can build your own spacecraft, and we'll have a spacecraft design fly off from the third floor bridge. Exclusive tours in the natural history, behind the scenes galleries, and in the archives and in the storage areas. All kinds of things doing, and breakfast is included also in that. So when we do overnights, we have a fantastic time. So that's the 29th through the 30th.
That'll be cool. I'm sure that will sell out fast with Star Wars fans.
Yes, we do have a great time.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's great that the IMAX is going to be able to show the Star Wars movie when it opens.
Right.
That'll be a big deal. I know I was actually just at the IMAX not long ago to see the Galapagos in 3D, mm-hmm. which was just fantastic.
And, of course, the day Santa landed, we opened Polar Express, and that will mm-hmm. run through the 16th, and then Star Wars opens on the 17th.
Very cool. And so let's see. What else do we have? We've got Santa's Playground.
Right.
Tell me
that
a bit
features,
about that.
That features a large blue blocks. Huge, mm-hmm. And it's called Imagination Playground, which is a STEM-based playground area. And we actually have two new components this year called Angles, which supplements the basic 110-block thing. But we're talking 3 feet in length and diameter, and they're all shapes and sizes. It's fascinating to see who comes in and builds something and who comes in and takes it apart or destroys it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fascinating overview socially of it. But it's a great thing. And again, the first day we had it last year, a father and son came in and literally built a castle to the ceiling of the education room it's in. So it's a great thing that we do there. We also have the tea room, Ellis Air's tea room, mm-hmm. Is part of our building. From the beginning that we when we opened the facility in 2002. And it's open every day during Celebration Crossing through January 3rd. And we have Tea with Dollies on the 27th of December and January 3rd. And that's where you can bring in your doll. And when I started the program last year, I envisioned that, you know, young girls would bring in the dolls they got for Christmas. And mm-hmm. really it turned out to be mostly adult women who brought in. Our curators are there to talk to you about the dolls give you the history of the dolls and anything the questions you may have. And then we also have tea with Mrs. Claus. That's mm-hmm. December 26th. Also starting December 26th, those of you who are familiar with the museum know we have a great hall, which is the four-story atrium. I'm bringing in basketball goals, and we're going to play basketball in the Great Hall from December 26th
really?
Through January 3rd. Yes.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see
I'm
that.
Calling it a Santa tournament. It's actually horse tournament spelled uh-huh. Santa. I've designed it so it's an adult and child for teams. So we'll have open shooting from December 26th through the 1st of January, and then on the 2nd and 3rd we'll have a tournament.
Wow. Now, some of these things, like the tea with Dolly or Santa's breakfast, people want to make reservations, of course, for the tea room. And they can do that online at IndianaMuseum.org.
Or 232-1637.
And also get the full schedule there for all
exactly
the different
right.
events and when
exactly
they are.
Right. And that, also Family New Year's Eve on December 31st.
Yeah, tell me about that. Right. And that's been a pretty popular
event. We've been
for
doing
you.
That since 1998 when we were over the old building. It's a family New Year's Eve because we turn the clocks back.
Start a little early.
Right.
Though you don't have to know that.
We celebrate at 8 o'clock. And mm-hmm. so parents can then take their children home to the babysitter and mm-hmm. go on to their own adult evening activities and celebrate at midnight. But we have a huge 2,000 balloon drop and confetti. And
that's awesome.
It's just a great
So the balloon
party.
Drops at 8 o'clock.
Correct.
Very nice. That's very cool. And definitely want to get reservations for that as
well for
all these things. It just sounds like a lot of great stuff going on, a lot of special programming. And, of course, the regular museum exhibits are open.
Exactly.
The skateboard exhibit's still open.
Rad Science. Exactly right.
Just
if you
so
haven't
cool.
been there, come see that. And we had a skate park maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago right out on the front lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fantastic event. So that will be running also through the time. We also have the Richmond Art Group from Richmond, Indiana. Mm-hmm. That's on the third floor of one of another revolving galleries. It's a fantastic time. Also, the weekends that we have, we also have themed weekends. So coming up this week on the 12th and the 13th, it's Pioneer, Indiana. So
okay.
we will have someone making cornhusk dolls in Santa's front yard. doing Pioneer Traditions that would have been happening during Christmas time in Pioneer, mm-hmm. Indiana, all preparing, of course, for 2016, which, of course, is the 200th birthday.
Yes.
So we'll be doing extra programming for that, too.
Nice. And then there's also performances going on, musical holiday performances.
Sounds.
That's pretty much nonstop, right?
Nonstop. Started on December 1st. Mm-hmm. It'll be running through the 22nd. And we invite anyone who wants to come in and sing, really.
So like high school choruses.
High school choirs. My favorite, of course, are elementary school bands. I remember the first time years ago when I had my first band come in, and the director said, well, you know, they can just barely play Jingle Bells. And I said, that's terrific. That's great. So that's a wonderful opportunity for both them and for us to share in their talents.
Very cool. And then for parents who have preschoolers, you do a special Preschool Friday? Where
Preschool Fridays,
Does it open up early for preschoolers?
We open at 9 and that's just for preschool, both preschools who want to come with their classes.
Mm-hmm.
And we do things like Ice Age Indiana, what are snowflakes made of, et cetera. But it also allows that extra hour from 9 to 10 for preschools to have exclusive visits with Santa.
Nice.
Without older children around, et cetera.
Very cool. A lot of great stuff going on.
Yes, I think so.
I have to imagine that the staff had a lot of fun when the pop-up arcade was installed.
Oh,
just making sure everything was installed correctly.
Oh, yes, of course.
Right?
We forced ourselves to try it. Yes, yes, it was.
And not all video games. Right? You said a couple pinball
machines? Right.
Awesome. Excellent. As a big fan of pinball, that sounds good.
Exactly right.
Nice. And then, of course, I'm just going to throw out that you guys have a great gift shop. If people are looking really fun, interesting, unique, many Indiana-based gifts.
The Indiana Store.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's part of our mission is to collect and preserve and interpret the natural and cultural history of Indiana. So you find it there.
Excellent. A little bit of everything.
You got it.
Sounds perfect. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter today. It sounds like there's a lot to do for the holidays at the Indiana State Museum, worth multiple visits to get everything in.
Thank you.
Must have a lot of fun programming all this.
Oh, we love it. We love it.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you again for coming into Art of the Matter.
Thank you, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with David McDaniel, Project Manager for Celebration Crossing at the Indiana State Museum. You can learn more at indianamuseum.org, indianamuseum.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Idle Jordan Museum recently opened its 9th Contemporary Art Fellowship exhibition. This year's show is called Conversations, and it features the work of 5 contemporary Native artists in sculpture, installations, multimedia work, and more. Sharon Gamble invited curator Jennifer Complo McNutt to tell us about this exhibit and the artist fellows.
So before we talk about the fellows this year, this is the 9th cycle?
It is the 9th.
Oh, my gosh. It seems like you just started this yesterday.
I know, but we started in 1999.
Wow.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Has it become what you had hoped it would become?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, it has evolved. One thing I'm really proud to say is that the Idle Jorg has been really responsive to making sure that the program changes over time. We started with 6 artists,
mm-hmm.
$20,000. We realized that we needed to up that ante a little bit. So
mm-hmm.
it's 5 artists, $25,000. The catalogs changed over time, and I hope improved over time. Our ability to create the videos of the artists, which are recorded on the Thursday before the opening of the exhibition,
mm-hmm.
and then by Friday night, those interviews are done.
That's a fast turnaround.
It is a fast turnaround.
And new technology makes that much more practical.
It does. And we've learned a lot. So we have a lot of things in the can and ready to go. And, you know, so it has become what I'd hoped it'd become, and more. I mean, we have this great collection. I'm really proud of the Idle Jorg Contemporary Art Collection. There are over 200 objects. They are iconic pieces. We attracted our first collection of a former fellow from one of his collectors last year. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that we want to have happening.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you also create kind of a virtual community. You were saying before we turned the microphone on that on opening week, the fellows come in, you take them to dinner. Then the next night you have an advisory committee that also meets with them.
We it happened that this year we had our Native American Advisory Council coming in for the opening festivities. And so we really want to get those two groups of people together so they can advise us, tell us what they think the museum can become in the future. It's really invaluable information.
Absolutely. And certainly very resume building for the artists as well as introducing them to potential new collectors, new museum professionals.
Right. And the documentation of their work in the video as well as the catalog is just critical for them because they have something to show. I was acknowledged as an artist. This work was deemed to be important and here is this beautiful catalog and
this
critical.
Here I am. I'm even more legit than you thought I was before. So how do you find your fellows? What is that process?
Well, it is not something that I do by myself or the Idlejorg Museum does. It is something that we look to the field to provide some curator type that is familiar with contemporary Native American artists, a contemporary art curator that is not so familiar with contemporary Native artists, and a former fellow. So it's really important to be legitimate in the contemporary art world, as well as be familiar with some of the contemporary Native artists, but let's keep it all honest. So we have some objectivity with that curator that isn't always showing or always a part of that group of Native artists. And this year, that was Mindy Taylor Ross.
Oh, fun.
Who happens to be a favorite of ours.
Good.
So, yeah.
Is there kind of a minimum bar as far as the artist must have exhibited X number of times? Or how do you kind of assess that?
That is really interesting how that works out. There is often a very young emerging artist. Mm-hmm. I would say this year, not as much. Mm-hmm. More kind of a little bit of established artists and one artist that is an invited artist who has established his career. But usually there is quite a variety and you will find a really young artist that maybe some of the other artists don't know. A lot of artists that are familiar at least with the other artist's work. They've been around for the last 10 or 15 years or 5 years or went to the same schools. And then we always invite an artist as part of fulfilling our collecting strategy. So if there's an artist that's been around for a while that maybe has applied and has a little bit of application fatigue, but we know that they're important to building that collection, then we will say, hey, are you available to be a part of this celebration and fellowship? And this year, that's Mario Martinez.
Mm-hmm. So you start with a pretty big pool. And
about 100, 125 artists. And we have these selectors sit down and look at all their slides. It's a blind adjudication to begin with.
Oh, good.
And then as it narrow, maybe down to about a half dozen, then we might read some artist statements. And eventually you'll get down to looking at somebody's resume and maybe if they have sent catalogs or anything else. So you get a broader range of their work than the 3 to 5 slides that we accept.
Remind us, for people who are maybe haven't thought about this for a while, what does an artist statement attempt to do?
That's a good question. it gives you a broad understanding of their philosophy. And a lot of times it will focus on a particular body of work. In fact, that's very helpful. People have a lot of expectations of visual artists and their verbal or written statements. And that can be a lot of pressure for a visual artist. But I would say that this group is pretty articulate and succinct. You want something succinct. You do not need a 5-page dissertation about what they're thinking about. You need something that gives you a path to get into their work.
Sure, sure. So tell us about the artists.
Oh, they're great. Mario is a painter, and he's he lives in New York City, and he's Yaqui, and he's really immersed in the city, spends time in the museums, really interested in the abstract expressionists, really interested in the modernists. And you can envision, or I can envision him in the museums looking at those paintings when I see his work. But when you talk to him, you'll say, Mario, what is it about? Or what is this about? And he always says, it all goes back to being Yaqui. It's Yaqui, Yaqui, Yaqui. So he's really connected to his culture and the history of his culture, which is very interesting because the Yaqui people merged their culture with Catholicism.
Really?
And so they have some really beautiful celebrations that have come out of that merger. But it wasn't the kind of cataclysmic coming together that some of the native people have had. It was more mutual, let's find how we're going to come together.
Find common ground.
Yeah, find common ground. And so it's an interesting history.
That's fascinating.
It is fascinating. It's worth looking into. Luzine Hill is Cherokee. There's three Cherokee women in the exhibition this year, which is a coincidence, although we've had some strong Cherokee women in the past who are just talking up the fellowship and encouraging people to apply. So Luzine is Cherokee, and her work is absolutely gorgeous. It is about sexual assault. Mm. But when you walk in, you will see about 3,872 quipu cords that are knotted cords that she's dyed crimson, all hanging all around a room with time stamps, and they represent the 3,872 unreported rapes per day in the United States.
That's chilling just to hear you describe.
It is. It's a very traumatic piece, but it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
That you're really drawn into it. So that piece, that it's very impressionable. Mm-hmm. It leaves a strong impression. And she has some other beautiful drawings and books in the exhibition as well. Then there's Deka Maynor. Deka's Tlingit, and he's from the Northwest Coast. And he has these beautiful rawhide drums that he's made.
Ooh.
And there is a tradition of transformation masks in Northwest culture. And so one drum will have his face, the next drum will have the mask, and then the next drum will have the mask opening and Deka's face in it. And those they're molded, so it's three-dimensional. It's not painted on.
Uh-huh.
It's very beautiful. And he's really interested in bringing back the Tlingit language to his community. And so some of his drums have a video component that includes him singing a canoe song in Tlingit.
Ooh.
And the way he's bringing back, or he's encouraging the language to be brought back, is through song. So it's quite beautiful. He also has about a dozen language daggers that are made of steel. And they have Tlingit words written on them, and then they're in a circle, and the opposite dagger has a word, the same word in English, so they're very beautiful.
Fun.
It's a really beautiful show. Very dramatic, but also really clean, and you can really spend a lot of time in it. One of the artists, Holly Wilson, has little figures, very miniature bronze figures that look very fairy-like, and they deal with things like her mother, who passed, and taking her mother off life support, and the 36 hours when she had to decide, am I going to stay or am I going to go? And so very poignant, but then also very whimsical, little figures coming out of geodes, representing the male and female side of us all. There are some little bronze, and when I say little, I mean an eighth of an inch size.
Whoa.
Origami bronze birds hanging with figures. So they're, it's really enchanting.
Yeah.
As well as having a very deep meaning. And some are just whimsical. They're, one of the great pieces is called Enough, and it's a girl standing on cupcakes with 100 cupcakes around her. So, meaning, is it or isn't it enough?
For me, probably not.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. Bring the cupcakes. And then, last but not least, Brenda Mallory is an artist from Portland, and she's a very interesting part of the group because she represents a group of Native people who live in a very urban environment, and many of the artists do, but have in the past had not exhibited with a lot of Native artists. And so this is enriching for her in being able to be with a group of artists and be in a group of three Cherokee women mm-hmm. in a situation that she hasn't been in before. So that's discussed in the catalog, and it's a really interesting position. Mm-hmm. Her work is very tactile and beautiful. She has an installation you can walk through. The forms are fabric, but they're covered in wax. They look very organic and leaf-like.
And she uses some found objects, right?
She does use some found objects, like she has one piece that looks like it's white fur, and it is string that is unthreaded and cut so that it undulates.
Ooh.
And everything that she does always has an industrial element. So she's really interested in reusing, recycling, mm-hmm. but she's very aware of the industrial or the very mechanical part of our society as well. So it's really interesting. It's a great show. It's a really great show.
Sharon Gamble with Jennifer Complo McNutt, curator of contemporary art for the Idle Jorg Museum. You can see the 9th Contemporary Art Fellowship exhibition called Conversations at the museum through February 28th. Learn more at idlejorg.org. Again, idlejorg.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I've been making a list and checking it twice.
Are you going to find out who's naughty and nice?
I am. And
oh,
we have
my.
Something for both the naughty ones and the nice ones on our calendar we call.
What do we do? Let's see. Is this one naughty or nice?
Well, you know, the Leisure Kings,
they're naughty.
Kind of a PG naughty, but they're going to be at the Jazz Kitchen this Saturday night.
I love them.
Night.
They're so much fun.
They are awesome. Think of, yeah. It, cheesy sometimes comes to word, but you know, it takes real talent to be cheesy intentionally. I'm just saying.
That's true.
Okay. So at the Jazz Kitchen this Saturday, they have a 7:30 show and a 10 o'clock show. So I think there will probably be some cocktails, especially at the 10 o'clock show. And also, as long as you're going to the Jazz Kitchen or their website to get your tickets for Leisure Kings, don't forget the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra holiday show.
With Everett Green.
With Everett Green is this Sunday with a 6 o'clock and an 8:30 show. 6 and 8:30 also at the Jazz Kitchen.
You know, that is one of my favorite holiday concerts. Mm-hmm. It's always so great, especially when they close it out with playing Silent Night.
It may not be the quietest, most peaceful night, but boy, and if you need to hear it again, don't forget, you'll hear it on our special holiday edition of The Art of the Matter as well. But go hear the concert first. This Saturday,
very fun.
This
Sunday, a lot of great things actually going on at the Jazz Kitchen, too. And, uh-huh. and do want to mention that they're doing their holiday sing-along on the 21st, uh-huh. Which is a great holiday tradition. And then also the Chatterbox is doing their holiday sing-along coming up on December 15th.
It's too bad. Maybe we could get them to do them the same night, and the carolers can go up
But Tuesday the 15th, Chatterbox, and then on the 21st, Jazz Kitchen for some sing-alongs.
And there's no auditions,
well.
Right?
Just show up and let it go.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, you heard about this on The Art of the Matter recently, but on Saturday the 19th, you still have a week or so to plan for that, Eric Grayson, our film guru here in town, is going to screen some home movies, not his home movies, but home movies he's acquired from other people, and newsreels of the 1933-34 Chicago World's Fair, which was called the Century of Progress Fair. And his partner in crime, historian Glory June Greif, will help narrate the Silent Home movie portion of the screening and have her own large collection of Century of Progress memorabilia on display. So ask your older relatives if anybody went to the Chicago World's Fair in 1933-34 or if they remember stories of grandma or great-grandma, grandpa going to that. Fascinating, fascinating kind of futuristic exhibits there as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
I should tell you that that's at the Garfield Park Arts Center on Saturday, December 19th.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
If you like Cirque, if you like Circus Acts, then Cirque Dreams Holidays is definitely a show worth checking out. It is a traveling circus, and they do some really, really great work. This one features over 300 costumes, 20 acts, 30 performers, lots of balancing and wire work.
Oh, I'm out then.
Strongman stuff. But what's really cool is that they're also supporting Second Helpings with their performances here. They're going to be at the Old National Center from December 15th through the 20th, and so it's a holiday-themed circus. So if you're into circus stuff, you know, there'll be, nutcrackers balancing, toy soldiers on thin wires, and snowmen and penguins and all sorts of stuff, but all, like, with a circus theme. But part of the proceeds from the performances are going to go help Second Helpings, which is, of course, a great local organization. So again, that's Cirque Dreams Holidays from the 15th through the 20th at the Old National Center.
You know people are planning to run away to that, right?
Yes.
Run away to join the circus.
Dressed
teams.
As a penguin.
Uh-huh. Dressed as a penguin or a balancing nutcracker. Hey, chances are it's not for me to say, but it would be wonderful, wonderful if somebody on your list, do you know the common theme yet?
Naughty and Nice?
If somebody on your list is a Johnny Mathis fan, he is doing, get this, this is amazing, a 60th anniversary tour. Amazing and fabulous that he's still performing. He's coming to Clues Hall, not until May, but I'm mentioning it to you right now because think how surprised somebody might be to get that as a holiday gift. Tickets to hear Johnny Mathis at Clues Hall. The exact date is May 14th. So, hey, you might be able to knock off Mother's Day and a holiday gift with tickets to Johnny Mathis.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice balance, too, to the Sophia Loren idea I had last week for
absolutely.
For
tickets.
Absolutely.
Equal time
for
girls.
There you go. Hey, a concert coming up. The Allen Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church is going to be having a concert titled Back Home Again at Allen Chapel Christmas Celebration on Saturday the 12th. 6 o'clock is the pre-show. 7 o'clock is the showtime. Where are they located? They are located on East 11th Street, basically the corner of East 11th Street and Broadway. And it is a free family Christmas concert. All are welcome to attend. And part of the proceeds raised from the free will offering will go towards their community outreach programs. Again, this is at the Allen Chapel African Methodist Episcopal Church this Saturday.
Speaking of concerts at churches, Voce, a church that is affiliated with Union Chapel United Methodist Church, is doing a madrigal dinner this Saturday night at 6 o'clock, and you can find out more at voceindy.org. That's voceindy.org/madrigal dinner. If you've never been to a madrigal dinner, you might enjoy it. Check it out.
Is it magical, the madrigal?
Magical madrigal dinner, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Hey, if you are out in Thorntown in Boone County, you might want to check out the exhibit Out of Chaos. That's the December show at the Sugar Creek Arts Center featuring artist Daniel Driggs. They are having an opening on December 11th from 6 to 9. And then throughout the month, you can check out the paintings, which are just really sort of beautiful nature type of paintings, very intricate work that would make a great gift. Also, Sugar Creek Arts Center out in Thorntown is just a lovely little arts center and worth checking out, and some great artists are working up there.
My next item is not directly holiday related, but if you're going to have a cup of coffee anyway, think about going to Cafe Patachou at 49th and Penn, the 49th and Penn location, to see John Krause's new photography exhibit. It features photos from some of his travels to South Africa, Botswana, Rwanda, some fabulous animal photographs as well. I don't know, you know, they might be for sale, or maybe you could buy a pound of coffee for your favorite person while you're at Cafe Patachou at 49th and Pennsylvania.
Not a bad idea. Hey, a year with Frog and Toad. It's that holiday tradition that the Actors Theater of Indiana does, and it is running from December 11th through the 27th. It is always just a fun show for the whole family, and just wanted to remind people that Year with Frog and Toad is happening again with Actors Theater of Indiana. That's up at Carmel. In the Performing Arts Center up there.
There you go. Can you believe that IPL's Yuletide Celebration has been around for 30, count them, 30 years?
30 years.
Patty is joining Jack Everly and the ISO and a cast of Broadway's finest vocalists and dancers. And there are...
Always a great show.
Always a great show. Included this year tunes from Frozen. How appropriate. Do you want to build a snowman and let it go? The Yuletide Jukebox will also return with a medley of pop holiday tunes. And as they say, much, much more. Too many performances to mention, but playing through December 23rd. Check the ISO's website for details.
And, of course, those concerts for Yuletide are at the Hilbert, but the Symphony is playing a couple other concerts as well that I want to mention. The Classical Christmas coming up this Saturday, the 12th at 5:30 at the Schrott Center for the Arts with Raymond Leppard doing a very intimate Classical Christmas. And then Handel's Messiah will be performed on Sunday, the 13th at 7:30 at the Palladium with the ISO along with the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir.
Fantastic. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little bit different source of gifts, check any arts outlet that you like. You know, tickets to a performing arts show, always a fabulous thing. And most of them will make you a pretty gift certificate or a gift card to give to your loved one. But you can also check gift shops like the Indianapolis Art Centers or the gift shop at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. And as a bonus, if you go to the IMA, you can check out Christmas at the Lily House. Beautiful decorations just for this holiday season.
Great gifts at the IMA gift shop, too. Hey, you know what is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, Sharon?
Something about Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins High Tea.
Oh.
Yes, yes. It's part of the production of Mary Poppins that the Civic Theater is doing up in Carmel. And they are doing a traditional English high tea as part of the performances. They're doing this on the 11th and the 18th. And you do need to get reservations for your high tea as part of going to see Mary Poppins at the Civic Theater. And you can get more information at tinastraditional.com. That's Tina's Traditional Old English Kitchen, where they're the ones who are doing the high tea for the Civic Theater's Mary Poppins.
Tina's makes delicious tea and accompaniments. Hey, don't forget you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. The Arts Council of Indianapolis is Indie Arts Guide. And whether you are naughty or nice, I hope you'll join us next week for our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
So many nutcrackers, so little time. What makes the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker different? It uses choreography by and inspired by George Balanchine. Travis DiNicola sat down with the school's founder and executive director, Victoria Liris, as well as its director of marketing and communications, Kara Hooley, to find out more.
Vicki, Kara, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So, Nutcracker, it's that time of year, that most wonderful time of year once again. Vicki, before we talk about the Nutcracker, just tell me a little bit about the Indianapolis School of Ballet.
Yes, it's a very exciting time for us. We are celebrating our 10th anniversary. The school was founded in 2006. And we have grown to over 230 students. We are located downtown at 502 North Capitol Avenue. And our main stage productions are at the beautiful Scottish Rite Cathedral.
Great place to perform ballet.
And then, of course, we do all kinds of outreach programs. We perform at the Arts Garden, Penrod, the Public Library downtown.
And your two main productions each year, one is Nutcracker and the other is a big spring production.
Correct.
That changes
in May.
Each year. So Nutcracker this year, which is coming up very, very soon, again at the Scottish Rite. So what makes this Nutcracker a little bit different from the other Nutcrackers is it's very much inspired by the choreography and uses choreography of George Balanchine, correct?
Yes, it is. It's very much inspired by Mr. Balanchine, and part of it is I'm a product of his school. I was formally educated at the School of American Ballet from age 8 through 17 mm-hmm. before joining Pennsylvania Ballet. So my experiences, my best childhood experiences were that of dancing the Nutcracker with New York City Ballet, 20 performances a year, and then for a good 7 years I participated in New York City Ballet's production. And what's magical about our production is that, first of all, it is indigenous to Indianapolis because the sets are based on the Morris Butler House.
Mm-hmm.
So when the curtain goes
great
up.
Great old Victorian house.
Oh, mm-hmm. just gorgeous, just beautiful. When the curtain goes up, you see the facade of the Morris Butler House on Park Avenue. And then as that scrim goes up, then you're inside the beautiful Victorian parlor. And that's where our party scene takes place.
And those sets, that was that tapestry or was designed by C. David Higgins, right?
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. who is retired now. But he was the magician at Indiana University, Bloomington. He has done so many amazing works for their opera and ballet department.
It's a great backdrop that you're fortunate to have.
Beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful. But they were commissioned, and he did the renderings, and, of course, his team executed the backdrops, and they're big 25-foot by 50-foot mm-hmm. backdrops. The Nutcracker is really Indianapolis-based, but what I also brought to the community was the snow scene, which is really like none other, is that of the choreography of Robert Rodham, who also was a Balanchine dancer with New York City Ballet and then with Pennsylvania Ballet. And he choreographed the snow scene for Pennsylvania Ballet back in the 60s. And we're one of the very few organizations that still performs it, with Nashville Ballet still performing it as mm-hmm. a professional ballet company. And then in the second act, most of the dances or divertissement are choreographed by myself, by me, with the exception of the jewel, the crown jewel of the second act, which is the pas de deux, or the duet between mm-hmm. the Sugar Plum and her Cavalier. And that is the exquisite choreography of George Balanchine. And I feel so blessed to have permission from the Balanchine Trust to stage this pas de deux for the last 5 or 6 years now. I've been staging it, and to have the rights to perform it, to include it in our version.
That's a pretty special thing that they give you the permission to do that because of your experience, of course, with Balanchine, and that you're an approved, what's the word?
Repetiteur. One who repeats, right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is something that's very special with dance, with really all types of dance, is the lineage that you can really trace from each dancer to their teacher to choreographers, because so much of dance is passed on from one person to another. It's not often that there's notation that can be carried on and that someone could recreate a dance if they had never actually met or worked with a choreographer or dancer. It's different than music or learning painting or other arts. I mean, dance is very much from one person to the next.
It has been, and there are various notation
possibilities. The Laban notation, very difficult to learn and to use.
But the majority of the Balanchine choreography was truly staged by repetiteurs in the style Mr. Balanchine would want. And not only that, but each repetiteur brings their generational version. So even if you may have two different repetiteurs staging Serenade, and you would see slight differences because, you know, maybe one generation was from the 50s and another one was from the 60s and maybe somebody else was from the 70s. And you have to understand the ballet Serenade, which is the beautiful Serenade for strings, the music of Tchaikovsky, that was done in 1934. March of 1934 is when Balanchine choreographed that work. And he had just started the school January of 1934. So this is really where it all began.
Let me ask you about George Balanchine. And I know that this is difficult for you because it's such a big part of your life. But for listeners who maybe only sort of recognize the name and they know that, you know, he was somehow important in ballet, tell us a little bit more why George Balanchine is so important to American ballet.
Well, George Balanchine began his choreographic career in Russia, of course. He went to the Imperial Ballet School. And when they fled Russia during the Revolution, he landed in Paris with a few of his colleagues, my teachers, Alexandra Danilova and Ophelia Dubrovska and others. And he was given many opportunities to choreograph for the Ballet Russe under the Diaghilev's regime. And then in 1933, Lincoln Kirstein, who was a East Coast philanthropist, really, he saw the Ballet Russe in Paris, and he invited Balanchine to come to America. And with Lincoln Kirstein's help, and others, of course, they started the School of American Ballet, as I mentioned, January of 1934. And subsequently, Balanchine tried several times to start a company, and it morphed several times over until it became the New York City Ballet. It was American Ballet Society, Ballet Caravan, and eventually it became a New York City Ballet in the 40s, in the late 40s. So Balanchine is George Balanchine is considered the father of American classicism because of the unique technique and style that he brought in his class and, of course, in his choreography. And that is that of pure classical ballet, but taken to such a high speed and technical level.
Very exact.
It's virtuosic. There's a lot of virtuosity in his choreography
and that's something
finesse.
Really, I mean, and again, for listeners who are thinking, okay, well, what makes Balanchine's choreography and style or students of his work, you know, different than others?
Right.
I mean, that's really where it comes through, is that finesse, that exactness, that the crispness.
The musicality, the approach, which has an attack that's not sharp or angular necessarily, but more of a no holding back type of attack. That you have to be quite fearless. It's athletic. It's fearless. And his belief was always to, why are you holding back? What are you saving for? Now is the moment. You know, push to dance to such an extreme because you don't know what you can do unless you go there. So it's very exciting, and there's really no holding back. You just take yourself to that higher level if you have the ability to learn this technique, and then of course the style in his choreography.
And that fearless spirit is something that you bring to your classes and to your own choreography.
Always. First and foremost, musicality.
Mm-hmm.
Music. Balanchine was a musician first. He was a highly accomplished pianist. He would sit at the piano and just play the scores. I mean, and this is why he had such a phenomenal relationship with Igor Stravinsky, and Stravinsky just wanted to work with him, and they created so many ballets together.
Well, it will be fantastic to be able to see the Indianapolis School of Ballet perform the Nutcracker. Kara, let me bring you into the conversation, and if you would just let us know when and where we can check it out.
Sure. The Nutcracker will be taking place starting opening day is Friday, December 18th, and will be running until Monday, December 21st, with a total of 5 performances. Friday at 7:30, Saturday the 19th at 2 p.m., and then another at 7:30 p.m., Sunday the 20th at 3 p.m., Monday the 21st at 3 p.m. also, and tickets can be purchased at indieballet.org.
Excellent. Now, I want to ask about some of the dancers, because in addition to the students from the school, you've got some special guests this year.
Yes. Well, we're delighted to once again have Paul Vitale come recreate his role as Drosselmeyer. He really originated the role the first year we did it. This is our 9th annual production of the Nutcracker at the Scottish Rite. And so I'm delighted he is coming back. And, of course, beside that he's my best friend. He was also my partner of many years at Pennsylvania Ballet. So Paul will be back. And then we have two beautiful sugar plums who also alternate as the Snow Queen. And that would be Betsy Boxberger, who is a graduate of Indianapolis School of Ballet and also Duke University. And Margaret Andriani, who is a sophomore at Indiana University. Colin Ellis, who is a senior at Indiana University. And new this year is Benjamin Warner, who is a graduate of Indiana University. And he also danced with Alberta Ballet. And Ben has joined us on our faculty. I am thrilled to continue the ongoing relationship with Indiana University. I am adjunct faculty down there. So it's a wonderful pool of talent that we can augment the principal roles with very, very talented dancers and give them the opportunities to dance.
And a couple non-dancers as well, right, from Indy 11?
Oh, yes. Well, before we get to Indy 11, we have the ongoing relationship with Riolo Dance, of course. And then with Indy 11, we have John Kaluder, who is Director of Public Relations, and Gijo Gordon, who is Director of Community Relations as part of our party scene.
That'll be very fun. And you mentioned Riolo, and they'll also be providing some of their dancers for the for the adults in the piece as well. Well, it will be, once again, a wonderful production to look forward to. Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker, presented by the Indianapolis School of Ballet. Kara, Vicky, thank you so much for coming in Art of the Matter today.
Thank you so much, Travis. Happy holidays.
Travis DeNicole with Victoria Liris and Kara Hooley of the Indianapolis School of Ballet. Their performances of The Nutcracker take place from Friday, December 18th through Monday the 21st at the Scottish Rite Cathedral downtown. For tickets and more information, visit indieballet.org, indieballet.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra, from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll find out about Art with a Heart's new kindergarten program.
And I'll find out about how the children's choir is celebrating the holidays. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DeNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DeNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.